The following sermon was delivered by Rabbi Joshua Davidson on Friday, October 17, 2014.
Dear friends, as I was leafing through a recent copy of the Princeton Alumni Weekly, I came upon an interesting article. 90 years ago yesterday, the Ku Klux Klan paraded through Princeton in a cavalcade of early automobiles. Back then, that part of New Jersey was known as a hotbed of Klan activity. The students of the day, though, would have no truck with the Klan, and 800 undergraduates descended on the menacing convoy to tear off their white hoods. Bigots and bigotry are not so easily exposed today. Flagrant bias, perhaps. But in many respects, racism is so ingrained in our social structures, so institutionalized, we who do not experience it do not recognize it until a highly publicized tragedy throws it into sharp relief, as happened in Ferguson, Missouri. But let us see clearly. The poverty rates among African Americans, the unemployment rates, the numbers without health insurance are all much higher than for the population as a whole, and generally twice those of whites. The de facto segregation of our neighborhoods, sometimes by choice, but more often economically motivated, prevents communities from ever truly knowing each other. And in the absence of such relationships, a shooting death like Michael Brown's more easily gives rise to confrontation, and racial tensions escalate. Dr. Cornel West, professor at Princeton and at Union Theological Seminary here in New York, recently emerged as a face of the response to Ferguson. Sunday, he headlined what was called a weekend of resistance in St. Louis. At the gathering, frustrated younger attendees upbraided the meeting's older, more established organizers for being too tolerant of the status quo, in West's words, for being too adjusted to injustice. And they resented being talked at by well-intentioned clergy who, though passionate behind the podium in October, had been absent on the street in August. One older speaker was appreciated, however, Shoah survivor Hetty Epstein, who spoke of how, upon her arrival to the United States in 1948, she was stunned by Southern racism. Her Holocaust experiences still alive and at work within her, she was among those arrested in August, protesting the police department's handling of the Brown shooting. She knew, and we know, that anti-Semitism and racism emanate from the same pathology, which begins with a failure to discern in those who are different a common humanity. Exacerbated by ignorance, often nursed by blame and fear, the disease eats away at the fabric of society. The rabbis understood. Encountering this week's Sidra, Parashat Bereshit, the scroll's first, they ask rhetorically why the Torah does not unroll at the beginning of our history as a nation, with our exodus from Egypt and the covenant at Sinai, or why it does not open with the origins of our history as a people, with God's covenant with Abraham. Why instead does Torah reach back to the story of creation and the formation of the first human being? And then they answer. The Torah intends to teach that just as the first human being, Adam, resulted in the creation of an entire world of people, Anyone who harms even a single human being harms an entire world. And anyone who saves another human being saves an entire world. The rabbis went on to explain that God created us from the same first human being to remind us that we are all brothers and sisters, and therefore none of us should ever say to another, "My lineage is greater than yours." They even taught that the angels in heaven directed God to create Adam with bits of clay from all over the earth, so that in the future none should say, "My ethnicity is greater than yours," and that the clay should be of varying color, black and white, brown, red and yellow, so that none might say, "My color is superior to yours." But the rabbis were not so idealistic as to deny our differences or the challenges those differences pose. When human beings mint coins, they taught, we cast them from a single mold, yet all the coins look alike. But when God makes people, God does so in the mold of the first person, Adam, yet each of us is unique. Our individuality underlies our humanity. It makes us who we are. But it does also separate us from others. None of us can truly understand what it means to be someone else or part of someone else's community. In that same university magazine, an African-American friend of mine wrote poignantly of his son attending a sophisticated prep school and being called a racial epithet in broad daylight. In his own effort to understand what had motivated the verbal assault of his child, he mused, "Try as I may to see things from the perspective of a white person, I can see them only from the experience that I have as a black man. As we observe each other and think that we have a close understanding of what it means to be black, white, Hispanic, Asian, male, female, rich or poor, we really don't. And very often we find ourselves gazing at each other through the wrong end of the telescope, and the relevant subtleties linger just outside our view, eluding us. Until we break down the walls that divide the communities constituting American society, the relevant subtleties will continue to elude us. We will never fully grasp the struggles, fears, and frustrations of our neighbors, nor will they understand ours. 50 years ago Tuesday, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. His acceptance speech then should inspire us now. Sooner or later, he asserted, all the people of the world will have to discover a way to live together in peace and thereby transform this pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of brotherhood. King believed houses of worship to be uniquely positioned to penetrate at least some of society's racial and ethnic barriers, so that diverse groups might speak candidly with one another about what it is like to be black in America, or Jewish in America, or Muslim in America. People of faith share a belief that the same divine spark which animated the first human being burns in all human beings. As our congregants know, last year Temple Emmanuel embarked on a relationship with the Abyssinian Baptist Church, and its pastor, choir, and members will return for the celebration of the Martin Luther King weekend this January too. But while large gatherings hold symbolic significance, for our outreach to be meaningful, we must do more. Bridging social divides requires ongoing conversation and partnership. And this is not happening among New York's religious communities, not the way it should. Yes, clergy from different faiths gather to address important communal concerns, but often without any congregants. I would like for our synagogue to initiate true intercongregational dialogue, studying together, speaking candidly with one another. If you are interested in being involved, please contact me by phone or email. And may we begin to reach out to our neighbors with whom we share this city and with whom we share a hope for a society at peace with itself. And in King's words, may we begin to transform this pending cosmic elegy into that creative psalm of brotherhood. Amen.